Welcome to the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little. Greetings. Welcome. We've selected questions to deal with today that were submitted by trusted advisors who are trying to struggle with how to implement truly comprehensive financial services at a level that really will make a difference so that clients are so impressed with the indispensable services being provided to them that they just can't resist introducing you and your team to everyone that they know. So let's get into it. I receive several questions each month, and among those questions, I select from among those to talk about the things that I think are the most relevant for all of you. So as we go through the content today, if you have questions, feel free to chime in. There's a spot on your GoToWebinar panel where you can submit questions. If you have any questions or issues as I go along here, please feel free to submit them, and we will deal with as many as we can before the end of our time together today. First question, very simple, straightforward. How can I get my subject matter experts to collaborate? I have a team of subject matter experts, and he goes through and he lists the subject matter experts that he's got currently on his team, and this is a full set. This is great. So he has a team, but his comment is that they seldom talk to each other. How can I get them to collaborate over client issues? Well, this is a huge issue. This is as you're going through the process of implementing truly comprehensive financial services. And there's 11 steps to implementing truly comprehensive financial services. So the fact that you're encountering this issue right now just means that you're following the normal, natural path to implementing at a very high level. So the first step is to build your team. The second step is to get your team delivering truly comprehensive financial services. And then as you continue down the process, you're now at the step where you've got a team, but you need to, what's the team worth, or what's the value of the team in your client's mind? What's the good of a team if they're not talking to each other? So it would be like if you're in the hospital with a major illness or battling a health issue, and you have various doctors in the hospital treating you, but they never talk to each other. So you've hit on an issue that is critical. I emphasize that the first step is actually just building your team. So you've accomplished quite a bit here by just simply having the team. And I will also say that, there are many skilled tacticians out there. Out there in the world, there are a lot of great financial planners, a lot of great tax experts. There's a lot of great money managers, estate planning lawyers, and insurance experts. So those people are already out there. But the fact that you've pulled them together into a team and that you've been selective and only invited onto your team subject matter experts who are willing to not just serve as a tactician in their narrow field of finance, but rather to pull back and to do what is very seldom found in a highly affluent person's life, and that's to act as a strategist. So most subject matter experts are by nature tacticians. They keep their nose to the grindstone and just focus on their narrow field of finance, and they give great tactical advice regarding their specialty. But what you've done is you've selected team members who are not only great at what they do, in other words, not just great tacticians, but people that are willing and able to serve on a team. They're good team players in addition to being really good at what they do. So once you get the team together, the one thing that these team members are usually not used to doing is collaborating. So this is a normal and natural part of the process. You have bumped up against and you are encountering the issue that once you get your team built, most financial advisors do struggle with. So I don't want you to get discouraged with this. And I will say that beyond the way I'm going to respond to this today, this is kind of a lifelong journey. So you're going to get some initial, I'm going to give you some initial strategies to get your team to begin collaborating. But even after you get these initial tools in place and start doing what I'm going to be covering here today, it's a lifelong journey to lead your team and to stimulate their thinking, to encourage them to continue enhancing the way in which they collaborate over clients. I will emphasize, you know, the fact that you have a team differentiates you from other financial advisors out there. But if you have a team and they're not collaborating, then they have not reached a potential of what they could mean to your clients. Your clients will not view your team as indispensable until you crack this nut and figure out ways to get your team actually collaborating with each other. Okay, so let me just kind of walk through the steps here, how you get your team to collaborate. It all starts with setting the initial expectation. So I guess, you know, the question I have for you is, have you set the expectation for each of your subject matter experts that you want them to collaborate? So as you're acquiring subject matter experts in the future, or if you ever need to replace a subject matter expert, if you haven't already, you need to add this to your process. You need to make sure that you set the expectation, that you let them know as they come onto your team that, you know, you only invite highly skilled subject matter experts onto your team, and that the way you measure this word skill is you set the expectations. You say, I expect every subject matter expert to have a robust process. In other words, the expectation is you're being invited onto my team because you really are good at what you do. You not only are highly skilled in your narrow field of finance, but you've got a robust process so that as I acquire an ideal client, I don't need to tell you what to do within your specialty. If you're a tax accountant and I acquire an ideal client, you know exactly what to do in the area of tax for these people that meet our ideal client profile. If you're a financial planner, same thing. You're used to dealing with people that meet my ideal client profile. I don't have to tell you what to do because you already know what to do. Same thing goes for estate planning, insurance, money management, all of them. So it's normal and reasonable in our environment to set the expectation up front that every subject matter expert is skilled, and skilled as measured by the fact that they have a very, very good existing process in place, and that you're not going to have to train them how to deal with people that meet your ideal client profile. They already know what to do because they've been dealing with people that meet your profile for quite some time. Secondly, to just lay it right out there, say, I expect every subject matter expert to contribute and to contribute at every client progress meeting. So I'm going to be, you explain to them, I'm going to be meeting with clients regularly. We have meetings with clients. Our process, and we've covered this in past episodes, so if this is a new term, you can go back and look at past episodes about this. But we implement something called the three-meeting process. That means we meet with every ideal client once every 4 months, at least, you know, once every 4 months. If they have critical issues in their lives, we might meet with them a little bit more frequently, but that's unusual. Normally, we're meeting with ideal clients every 4 months. And I expect every subject matter expert to contribute at every one of those meetings every 4 months. And I expect every subject matter expert to collaborate. So the question today has to do with how do I get my subject matter experts to collaborate. And I'm pointing out that as you're setting your initial expectations with every subject matter expert, you need to set that expectation up front, that in between every single client meeting, in addition to contributing to the meeting, contributing something, you expect every subject matter expert to collaborate with the other subject matter experts in between meetings. And if they ask you about this, you can make the point that I just made. You know, the fact that we have a team differentiates us, but we're not going to be radically differentiated from every other financial advisor and every other financial advisory business model out there until our team is not only in place, but that they're actually collaborating as a team for the benefit of the clients. So I expect every subject matter expert to collaborate with the other subject matter experts in between every client progress meeting. And I expect every subject matter expert to review the work of the others, the other subject matter experts, prior to every client progress meeting. So you're going to submit and contribute work. You're going to collaborate with the others on the team. And then prior to every client progress meeting, I expect you to review the work of the other subject matter experts just to see what they're doing. You know, as they submit work, I want you to look at it. And that means you have an opportunity to weigh in on issues. You know, if you're a tax expert and you were approaching a client meeting and you're looking at the financial planner's recommendations and you're looking at the estate planning attorney's recommendations, you might have tax opinions on those issues that those other subject matter experts are dealing with. So I expect you to review the work of the others and weigh in regarding your narrow field of finance on every issue, on the other issues that the other subject matter experts are putting forth. And if you don't have any comments, you know, continuing with this hypothetical example of a tax subject matter expert, if you're looking at the work of the others prior to a client progress meeting and you have no tax opinions about any of those things that the other subject matter experts have submitted, well, then we still want you to contribute. After you've reviewed the work of the other subject matter experts, if you have no comment as it relates to your field of finance, well, then play client advocate. You could call it devil's advocate, client advocate, whatever the case. You show up at, able to ask questions as though a client would be asking questions, just to put pressure and test the recommendations of the other subject matter experts. So it's not enough. If you don't have any issues related to your field of finance as a subject matter expert, I expect you to play the client advocate and ask tough questions. We want you, everybody on the team, to behave in a collegial manner. We are a team after all, but it's stimulating. I expect every subject matter expert to ask tough questions of the other subject matter experts' recommendations. So set the initial expectation prior to having a subject matter expert join your team. And then begin publicly praising collaboration when it shows up. So we talk about contributing at every client progress meeting and expecting subject matter experts to collaborate in between client progress meetings. We do have a meeting, an internal meeting that we recommend that you hold prior to every client progress meeting as kind of an internal dress rehearsal. So a week to 10 days before the actual client meeting, we teach you to hold and conduct routinely what we call a dry run prep meeting. So the dry run prep meeting is a 20 to 30 minute meeting a week or 10 days before the actual client meeting. It's an abbreviated kind of dress rehearsal. This is where your subject matter experts show up and present all the recommendations that they've developed for this meeting with this client. And this is where your opportunity for your subject matter experts to this is one of the opportunities where your subject matter experts can collaborate. So I talked about a subject matter expert asking, playing client advocate and asking tough questions about the other subject matter experts' recommendations. Well, it's during this dry run prep meeting where you can see that. And my point is, when you see that, praise it. So when you have a subject matter expert quizzing another subject matter expert at the dry run prep meeting about their recommendation, just asking tough questions as a client would, then praise that. Thank them either during the meeting in front of everyone or pick up the phone after the dry run prep meeting, call them up and tell them, hey, I really appreciated how you weighed in That's what I'm looking for. That's what really helps the client. That helps our process. It helps all of us raise our game to the next level if we're asking tough questions and we're challenging recommendations in a collegial manner. The other thing is we're going to talk in a minute about a tool that measures your subject matter experts' interactions in between client meetings. So as we said above, if you expect and set the expectation that, you know, you expect every subject matter expert to collaborate in between meetings, I'm going to share in a minute a tool that your subject matter experts can submit as evidence that that is happening. And again, when you see that happening, if you see that subject matter experts are collaborating in between meetings, praise them publicly. Praise them in the dry run prep meeting. And always feel free to pick up the phone and just thank them personally for the interactions that you've seen that have occurred in between client progress meetings. The other team members will begin to catch on as you consistently publicly praise those team members who are increasingly collaborating in between the meetings and collaborating during the dry run prep meetings. And then finally, this is really important. And this is actually something not just for financial advisors, but in small business owners across the board. This is a piece that is often missing. And this is something that just falls through the cracks in many businesses and is not done consistently or effectively. And that is to have a meeting with each one of your subject matter experts on a regular basis to measure success, to make sure that the arrangement is working for both parties, that your clients are increasingly viewing the team as becoming indispensable in their lives, and that you can tie the work of each individual subject matter expert to the increasing reality that clients are becoming more and more dependent upon the team and view the team as indispensable. And you can trace that reality back to individual subject matter experts, or if you can't, this idea is that you're sitting down regularly with every subject matter expert to discuss to what extent the quality and quantity of the work of each subject matter expert actually is. We call this the expectations conversation. We believe and encourage you to have this conversation with each subject matter expert one-on-one at least once every 4 months. That's 3 times per year. So just as we recommend that you have three meetings with a client each year, the three-meeting process where you're meeting with your ideal clients once every 4 months, by the same token, we recommend that you sit down with each subject matter expert and have the expectations conversation at least every 4 months so that you can review how the relationship is actually unfolding. And it's during these expectations conversations that you should, in all cases, be measuring this collaboration. And all of the 4 items above, you know, you're sitting down every 4 months reviewing whether, you know, the subject matter expert's robust process and, you know, what they can and should be doing to take that to an even higher level so that clients view us as even more indispensable as time goes on. You expect subject matter experts to contribute at every meeting. You discuss that. You expect this subject matter expert to collaborate, and so you measure that and discuss that every 4 months, how that's increasing and improving or how that's going, and reviewing the work of the others. So it's not just setting the expectations, but the power is in sitting down every 4 months and kind of assessing how things are going and measuring progress. So by encouraging simple interactions between your subject matter experts, that's where we recommend that you actually start this process. So we want you to begin this whole idea of encouraging your team members, your subject matter experts, to do something that they're not used to doing. They've never been asked before, even if they're the best accountant or lawyer or financial planner, money manager, if they're the best in your community, best at what they do, best in class, it's very seldom that these subject matter experts, as skilled as they are, have ever really been asked to collaborate. And so how you begin that process, how you put the toe in the water to begin this process, is just to encourage simple interactions. Now, what is an interaction? If you're going to encourage interactions between your subject matter experts, you can tell them it could be picking up the phone. If there's an issue with a client, pick up the phone. It could be email, trading emails back and forth about a client issue. It could be actually sitting down and having a meeting with two or more subject matter experts, or they might have a routine. I've seen subject matter experts on our team in the past that routinely, maybe once a month or so, you know, they have two or three of them, maybe more, have a kind of a standard lunch. They just meet for lunch. And they come with some notes related to clients, and they just, they interact about the clients. So that's where you start. You encourage simple interactions between your subject matter experts. And you explain that the way you measure collaboration is by the number of these interactions between subject matter experts in between client meetings. So you need to be very clear about this. I expect collaboration. I'm encouraging you to interact with other subject matter experts on our team. And the way I'm measuring this is I'm looking at every client progress meeting. I'm looking back and I'm seeing how many times did you interact with another subject matter expert about this client since we met with this client 4 months ago. And I'm measuring success of collaboration in by the increasing number of interactions that you're having with the other subject matter experts on our team. And these interactions should be discussing, you know, brainstorming issues, consulting, anything related to issues connected to our ideal clients. I want my subject matter experts not only kind of sticking to their knitting and sitting in front of their computer, in front of their office doing their job. I want you to be investing some portion of your time. Yes, I want you to do your job, but I also want you to interact with the others on the team to brainstorm issues, work through strategies, come up with newer and better ideas of how a client can accelerate their results, talk about the tough issues facing a client. If a client's going through a dark period of their financial life, how can you brainstorm to help this client come up with strategies to deal with it? If there's an issue, a financial issue on the plate for a client right now, maybe they're selling a business or they're retiring from their corporation or they've just received an inheritance or one of the two spouses has just been diagnosed with a serious illness. Whatever the issue that the client is facing, I want my subject matter experts meeting to brainstorm and consult and discuss new ideas, ways that the clients can deal with the important issues in their life. And the way I'm measuring this is I want those interactions to occur, and I'm asking that you as a subject matter expert submit something that we call the interaction log. I want you to submit the interaction log to my administrative manager in my office within 24 hours after every interaction. So what in the world is an interaction log? And is this a big demand? Is this a big hassle factor on their part? I not only want my subject matter experts to collaborate and interact with each other, but I'm going to ask that each of them submit an interaction log after they've interacted with each other within 24 hours to my office. Okay, the interaction log. Let's walk through it. What is the interaction log, and why am I asking that they submit this to my office every time they've had an interaction with another subject matter expert? Well, the interaction log is simply a standardized format for taking meeting notes. I think we can all agree that it's a good idea. Most people already do this, but if not, I think we can all agree that it's a good idea for anyone sitting in a meeting, a business meeting, where you're discussing important issues. It's important that everybody sit there who's participating. It's important that everybody take notes and that you don't just rely on your memory. So all the interaction log is a format for taking meeting notes. So what we recommend subject matter experts do is when they have this interaction, it could be a phone call, it could be an email, it could be an actual meeting with another subject matter expert, whatever it is, just we encourage subject matter experts just to take meeting notes the way they normally would. Don't worry about the interaction log during the meeting. Just take notes the way you normally would. It's after the meeting that those notes need to be converted into this interaction log, this format. And either the individual taking the notes, which is the subject matter expert, or this is better if your subject matter expert can pull it off, to have their assistant take their notes and convert them to this interaction log format. Okay? So every person takes meeting notes in a different way. See, I think we can all agree, like if I'm in a meeting and you're in a meeting, I'm taking notes, you're taking notes. If we then sit down and actually just look at the two pieces of paper, they might be similar, but they're going to be different. I mean, I take notes in a different way. The words I use, the things that I choose to write down versus the things that I think are kind of obvious and I don't note are going to be different for different people. So this is actually a problem. So if you are coming in behind reading my notes or somebody else's notes from a meeting, depending on what I decide to include, depending on what I decide to omit because I think it's maybe obvious and so I just don't note it, it could be confusing to you. Like you could read my notes from a meeting and other than the fact that you may not be able to read my notes, you may not understand the gist of the meeting. And some missing information's not always there. Like I might look at my notes and it's obvious to me that the action items coming out of this meeting are A, B, and C. And so the next steps of what needs to be done after the meeting is very obvious to me just looking at my notes. But that's not maybe obvious to you. You look at my notes and you think, okay, so I see what was discussed. So what's the action item? So we can acknowledge every person takes meeting notes in a different way, and the interaction log corrects that problem by creating an expected format so that when you read my notes, you don't have to worry about all the relevant information being there. The interaction log actually ensures that all the relevant information is indeed included in the notes. The interaction log eliminates this natural human tendency that I was discussing to actually omit relevant information, and it's information that maybe for me, I exclude because I think it's obvious. But the interaction log actually puts a little section in, and you'll see the format here in a minute when I lay it out for you. But basically, the interaction log eliminates this natural human tendency because it's like a form or a framework or a format for taking your notes and just filling in the gaps. And as you'll see in a minute, so that the things that the next person who reads my notes is going through them, they're not sitting there left to wonder, well, what are the next steps, or what are the action items, or who was in this meeting? Like it may not be even clear from the notes who was present in the meeting or who was on the phone in the meeting. So the interaction log is a format that makes sure that all the relevant information is there so that the consumer of the notes is not confused. A standardized format simply allows those who consume or read the notes later to, number one, quickly absorb the information. And I think this is one of the least advertised benefits of the interaction log, but I think is one of the most important benefits, is the fact that because it's a standardized format, after reading dozens, hundreds, thousands of these meeting notes in the same exact format each and every time, my eye quickly goes to certain sections. Now, what I may look at and the way I absorb an interaction log may be different from the way you absorb an interaction log. But the fact is, because it's standard, you can kind of grow accustomed to what you look at first, what you look at second. For me, I look at when the meeting occurred, who was present in the meeting, and then I kind of skip past everything and I go straight to the action items. I want to see what needs to happen next. Then I go back and scan what actually was discussed, because with the, in my mind, the way it works for me is if I see what the action items are out of the meeting, then that kind of gives me a little focus for reading through the actual meeting notes to determine what was discussed. Anyway, but you can do it differently. The point is, because it's in a standardized format, you can quickly absorb the information because you grow accustomed to seeing the meeting notes in the exact same format each and every time with no missing information. And it allows you to focus on the most important information. So, like I said, for me, it's the action items and the next steps after an interaction. So when I'm reading the interaction log from two other people that have met, you know, I kind of go through the interaction log the way I described. But you can similarly focus on the most important information for you because it's in a standard format and you become accustomed to seeing the notes in that format. So on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, which I recognize not everybody listening to this has access to the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, but I do want to point out that on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, the interaction log is fully described. It's mapped out with a process of how to implement this with your team. I just wanted to quickly go through for the purpose of this discussion. Let me just hit the highlights of this so you kind of get the gist of exactly what the interaction log is and how to implement it. So we talked about the value of a standardized interaction log format. The fact that somebody's meeting notes are in a standardized format is going to really simplify things, not for the person writing the notes, but it's all focused on the other members of the team. So if you want other members of the team to benefit from the insights of the discussion between two subject matter experts, then they've got to create some work product out of the meeting so that others on the team understand what went on. So if you have two people in a meeting, two subject matter experts, each of them creates an interaction log, and then you provide that standardized interaction log from both parties or all three parties, whoever was in the meeting, to the others on the team, then those members of your team who were not present in the meeting get the benefit of the meeting. So if there was a breakthrough, if there were strategies discussed that might help a client, it's not just isolated, this discussion, to just those present in the meeting or on the phone or trading emails back and forth. No. By creating an interaction log, let's say there's a thread of emails, maybe four or five or six emails back and forth between two subject matter experts. If after that back and forth, each of the parties, each of the subject matter experts creates one interaction log for that thread of discussion so that the others on the team can gain the benefit of what was discussed, what was resolved, what the insights were, putting it all into a standardized interaction log format is going to save time for future subject matter experts to really get benefit of that conversation. And it creates an archive for posterity. So it creates an archive for the future of all interactions of significant issues related to a specific meeting with a specific client or a specific issue, so that as you maintain a file of these interaction logs by client or by meeting, then future subject matter experts, if they're doing research on an issue or if they're just trying to get familiar with a client, just think of the wealth of information in the archive if you're maintaining a library of all these interaction logs between your subject matter experts. This really cracks the code of beginning the process of collaboration. You not only are encouraging the collaboration, but you're creating a format that documents the collaboration in such a way that the others on the team can benefit from the insights of the meeting. And for the future, you've got an archive of all these interactions that will help help future subject matter experts that are researching this client to understand what's happened in the past and the important issues that have been discussed. So here's the interaction log format. The interaction log format is just each one of these sections. So So you take the notes in a meeting, and I've got my handwritten notes. Now I'm looking at this format. So the first thing, as a subject matter expert, I would fill out is, when did this meeting occur? What was the month, day, and year, time, and place, venue of this interaction? Was it a phone call, an email? Okay, that right there gives other readers context. Like, when did this interaction happen? If it's a thread of emails, you can say that this occurred between these dates, and it was several emails, but you're summing up the whole conversation in this one interaction log. But just putting that first piece of information gives important context to future consumers of this interaction. That information that sometimes is missing when I read the notes of others. The second section is individuals interacting. So this is where you literally, I just put bullet points, and I encourage you to just list the individuals that were participating in this interaction. So maybe it was the tax subject matter expert and the financial planner, just hypothetically. You would list those individuals' names and roles on here, just bullet point them so that the person reading this can see who was interacting. The purpose of the interaction. So this isn't always filled out, but it should be. I think if you're going to interact with someone on the team, it's always nice, just kind of as an internal mental discipline. What's the purpose of the interaction? So you might say, as a tax expert, I called the financial planner because I had a question about some, and then you can name the specific issue. So you had a purpose to whoever initiated the interaction. There should have been, you know, in most cases, a purpose for the call or a purpose for the interaction. And so you just list it as a one-liner usually here. Sometimes there's multiple purposes. This framework can be used in a very flexible way. So if there was, in essence, an agenda, then you could list all the agenda items as the purpose for the interaction. But anyway, this helps, again, give context to the person who comes after you who's reading this. Best outcome, and then if you hop down three after this, you see best outcome and actual outcome. This is optional, but I highly encourage my team to use these two sections. So if I have a purpose of the call, then I get to note here, what was I hoping for in advance? In other words, maybe it was a client tax problem, and the best outcome of this interaction would be to talk to the financial planner to resolve the client problem so that we can, you know, contact the client with an answer. Whatever the hoped for outcome in advance was, you get a chance here on the interaction log to list in advance of this interaction, what was I hoping to achieve as the best outcome of this interaction? And then a few items down, what was the actual? So did I actually accomplish in this interaction what I had hoped for in advance? So again, those are optional, but because sometimes maybe let's say a client calls you. Well, okay, you can write the purpose for the interaction. At some point, the client says, hey, the purpose for my call today is, and then they tell you, so you would write that as the purpose of the interaction. But because you didn't initiate the interaction, you didn't have a best outcome in advance. So you can omit best outcome and actual outcome if you were the recipient of an interaction. Let's say the money management subject matter expert calls you as some other subject matter expert. If you are on the receiving end of an interaction, then you can omit best outcome and actual outcome because you're not initiating. You didn't hope for anything in advance because you actually just picked up the phone. Okay, last step was. This is usually really important. So maybe the last step was just kind of continuing the hypothetical of a tax subject matter expert talking to the financial planner about a client's tax problem. Maybe the last step was, just for context, that this same tax problem occurred last year as well. Just for context, to say the last step was, last year, this was a new client, and they told us the story of how this same tax problem reared its ugly head in past years as well. So you're just letting everybody else know what the last step was. Maybe the last step was you spoke with the client and they asked you to deal with an issue. So you need to let people know that prior to this interaction, what happened what kind of, you know, what happened as the preceding step, the last step was, and you just describe it for whoever's reading the notes. So it, again, it gives context. If there was something that happened prior to this interaction, by sharing what the last step was, it really helps. You don't have to put, see, the thing that I don't want you to think is that each of these sections needs to be a lot of content. Usually it's just a one-liner or a couple of one-liners. I like bullet points. I'll show you an example of in a minute of what an interaction looks like when it's filled out. But the point is, to describe what the last step was, it could be just a one-liner saying, client called me, they had a question, so I picked up the phone and called the financial planner to talk it through. And that just gives whoever's reading the notes some context as to what kind of got this whole interaction rolling. Highlights of the interaction. Okay, so that section right there, that is the section where you insert what formerly we would have called your meeting notes. So you've got your handwritten notes coming out of the meeting. I'm assuming they're abbreviated. You've just got bullet points of the highlights of what was discussed. This is where you take from your meeting notes and document what was actually discussed. So again, some people take, in essence, transcripts. I mean, it's amazing. I look at some people's notes and I can't believe how detailed they are. And other people, like me, I just kind of jot down the highlights and I just write down the headlines of what we talked about. And so those go in the highlights of the interaction. So that section says highlights. You just drop your notes, type your notes in there. And this is where I say, if you can get your assistant, if you can get your subject matter expert to get their assistant to fill this out for them, you know, the way this works, has worked for me in the past. My administrative manager comes to me. I hand my meeting notes over to my administrative manager. My administrative manager has this interaction log format sitting right there in front of them, and they're interviewing me about all these other things. What was the month, day, year, and time of the interaction? Who was interacting? What was the purpose of the interaction? You know, Mark, what was the best outcome that you hoped for in advance? What was the actual outcome? What preceded this? What was the last step? And then here are the highlights. And as long as my administrative manager can read my notes, they'll drop those notes into the highlights and then the actual outcome. And then the next step, that's critical. This is where the individual lists what the action items are coming out of this interaction. So after this interaction, it was agreed upon that these action items or these next steps or these follow-ups, you know, these are the next few little things that need to happen after this, after we've had this interaction. And then we list, and the very last section on here is the individuals this interaction may affect. Again, this is really important because sometimes somebody reading this interaction may not realize that they themselves actually have a role in what happens next. And so the individuals this interaction affects is simply a bullet-pointed list of people that, as you look at the next steps, you're thinking, here's the list of people that are involved in all these things that I just listed as the next steps. And so it gives the people, it does two things. It gives the people on your team or whoever's involved a heads up that they have a role. It'll either be obvious to them after reading this interaction log what their role is, or at the very least, if they see their name on the list of individuals this interaction affects, if they see their name on the list and they're not clear on what they're supposed to do, well, they know who to contact to ask questions. The second thing that listing the individuals this interaction affects does is it creates the distribution list for this interaction log. So if there are five or six names of people or two or three names or maybe even just a couple names of people that are individuals this interaction affects, then your administrative manager, so see, these interaction logs are going to be submitted within 24 hours after the interaction. So now they're submitted to your office. Your administrative manager in your office is now in possession of this interaction log. So other than having you as the advisor look at this interaction so that you can absorb it, you know, the question in your administrative manager's mind is, who do I need to distribute this to? So for those using the toolkit, all these interaction logs are definitely linked in the online meeting plan. But regardless, immediately when the interaction comes in, it needs to be distributed to the individuals that the interaction affects. So by listing all those names, you as the creator of the interaction log are creating, in essence, a distribution list of people that will receive this interaction log after it's created. So here is, just to sum up, require that this interaction log be submitted to your administrative manager within 24 hours. This is the thing that when you're setting expectations and you're trying to get collaboration rolling between your subject matter experts, you mentioned that collaboration is not happening. This is where you start. Just encourage them to begin interacting and praise them when they do interact, praise them publicly. And then when you have your expectations conversation with them every 4 months, just talk about the quantity and quality of these interactions. And here's your measurement. Are they happening, and are we getting them into our office within 24 hours after these interactions occur, so that we can, you know, distribute these to the people involved so that the others on the team can see it? And if you're using the toolkit, you can link these interaction logs immediately to the online meeting plan for a specific meeting with a specific client that's upcoming. So require that you get these from everybody on your team within 24 hours. And I think the key is to make sure that these interaction logs are then available to your other subject matter experts, as we say, so they can actually benefit from the insights of this interaction. I mean, that's where the magic begins to occur. When subject matter experts who weren't even in this meeting begin to get accustomed to seeing this format and reading through these interactions and thinking, wow, I didn't know this was going on with this client. And oh, by the way, I think there may be some implications in my narrow field of finance that they can join the conversation, or they can contribute additional helpful information or analysis, because now they know something they didn't know before. They've received this interaction log, and now there's a new issue related to this client that we're all serving that everybody on the team is now aware of this issue. So I promised I would show you an example of an interaction log after it's filled out. So as you can see, it's pretty short and sweet. And the reason I showed it in this format is because the way that most of your subject matter experts will convey these interaction logs to you will probably be by email. You may have some other better system, some internal secured communication system that allows your team members to interact in a secured way. But regardless what system you use, even if it's just as simple as sending your administrative manager in your office an email following the exact format of the interaction log, and then as you can see in green here, the assistant to this subject matter expert just filled out the format and submit it to the administrative manager. As you can see at the bottom, the individuals this interaction affects is the administrative manager and the tax subject matter expert. So that means that the administrative manager receives this email and then knows to distribute it to the tax subject matter expert, as well as linking this interaction log to the online meeting plan for this client, Ozzie and Harriet Nelson, so that everybody on the team can see it. So that's the interaction log. So your question was, how do I get my team to collaborate? That's a lifelong journey to continue that process of improving collaboration. But the starting point is the interaction log. Encourage your team to use this format and start measuring how often your subject matter experts actually interact with each other in between client meetings. Question, how do I create an extraordinary client experience? I've heard you mention how important the client experience is. What can I be doing to enhance the experience my clients have at our meetings? Well, I would say you've hit on a big issue here. Clients, when they're studied, when you survey clients, they do not rate their client experience very high when asked about their dealings with financial services companies. So whether it's their financial planner or their money manager or their, you know, institution, their investment company, whatever the case, clients do not rate the experience that they have with their financial advisors as extraordinary. So we do. We set that as a standard. So this is a great question. Again, this is something that you'll spend the rest of your professional life dialing this in. I have, and there is so much more to this question than I would possibly be able to cover right here. But let me just give you the overview and let me get the ball rolling for you on how to begin creating an extraordinary client experience. Because I agree, to the extent that you can pull this off, the payoff is quite high. If you can create a really great client experience every time they enter, and I would say more than just in the meetings, if every time they call into your office, if every time they interact by email, if they receive something in the mail, if they and including the meetings within the office, if every interaction with your business is extraordinary, that will increase the level of trust your client has in you, and it will increase your referability. It means that you are easier to refer by a client who is impressed with the way you operate. Okay, so you've really hit on an important issue here, and you're right. You hear me talking about this all the time. So, one thing I want to address and confront before we really get into this is the natural tendency to continue doing what you've been doing as a process and a business model up till now. And what we're really talking about here in creating an extraordinary client experience is creative destruction. It's tearing up what you've done in the past and starting over to start from scratch and create a new business model that delivers an extraordinary client experience. So you need to, in your own mind, and help your team unwed themselves from the status quo. So whatever you've been doing up till now, you need to gather your team and announce that your goal is to actually disengage from your existing business model. That your decision you've made the decision that you're going to provide truly comprehensive financial services delivered through a team of subject matter experts. And it's not going to be just a new set of processes that are slapped on top of what we've been doing up till now. We're not just adding a layer on top of what we're doing now. No, we're blowing up what we've done, and we're going to re-examine what the value that we're providing to clients, and we're going to start from scratch. So you as an advisor need to inspire your team and explain to them that you're going to be ripping up the script, starting with a blank page, and creating a completely new business model. You're going to be creating something that we call a blue ocean strategy. Okay, so blue ocean strategy is not a new term. It's actually a term that I'll walk through here in just a minute and where that origin of that term came from. But the first step is that what you need to convey, you need to decide in your own mind, and then you need to convey to your team is you're going to let your existing clients tell you what the crucial few things are that you are doing for them that they truly value. So the first step in this process is not to form any opinion in your mind, and to encourage your staff, don't form any opinions about what you think clients value about what we do for them. That is the wrong approach. You're going to need to initiate a process to talk to your best clients. If you just have a handful of clients that you consider to be ideal clients, just talk. Even if it's two or three clients, start with them, interview them, and say, look, candidly, what are the things that we do that you really consider indispensable? And prepare yourself to be surprised both positively and in some cases you may be concerned. I mean, you may have a very valuable client that cannot for the life of them think of anything that's indispensable. And they might be polite and start and talk to you about some things that they consider somewhat valuable, but you need to be very sensitive to this and realize whether a client's describing something because they're just kind of digging deep and coming up with something to say versus you can tell from their enthusiasm and their emotion that what they're describing of things that you do are actually indispensable. And that you need to make the decision and convey to your team that everything else, every other process in your firm is going to be uprooted. Either you're going to completely re-engineer it or you're going to maybe just streamline it or drop it completely. When I say that your clients are going to tell you the crucial few things you do that they consider valuable, the crucial few is a term that we've come up with to describe the 80-20 rule. So I just want you to think about the fact and just acknowledge that there's, of all the things that you do for clients, of all the processes that you've built up over the years and things that you're doing and you've created routines for your clients, just start with this premise that there's probably just 20% of all that stuff that you do that clients truly value. That 80% of what clients value about what you do is probably attributed to just 20% of the things that you're doing. That implies you could probably literally drop 80% of what you're doing and retain 80% of the value in the client's mind. So your goal is to figure out what those 20% of the things are, and then all the other processes just get completely uprooted. Either drop them completely or streamline them dramatically so that you can create a more extraordinary client experience. And explain to your team that you're getting rid of the culture. You know, I don't ever want to hear anybody on my team say, you know, when I ask why are we doing it this way, I don't ever want to hear that's because that's the way we've always done it here. You know, you're getting rid of that culture completely. That's the point. If you're going to deliver an extraordinary client experience, you're going to get your team away from this thinking that we've always done it this way. And we're going to deliver on the Advisor Pact pledge by starting with a blank piece of paper. It's zero-based thinking. We're going to pretend we've never been in business before, and we're going to build up the delivery of this Advisor Pact promise by adding processes which deliver on that promise and don't worry about a lot of the other things. So if we've done a lot of things in the past, you know, just consider the possibility that we're going to drop a lot of all that other stuff and just focus on the Advisor Pact pledge and streamline our thinking on delivering on what clients truly value in what we do and how to deliver on that Advisor Pact promise. I think the key here is think simple. You know, it's funny, back in 2005, I read a book that was recommended to me called The Blue Ocean Strategy. It was a really groundbreaking book for me. I do not recommend that you take the time to read it. I don't think you need to. I'm going to cover the enough of the key concepts here just so you understand why it's important to think in terms of creating a business model that's a blue ocean strategy for yourself, as opposed to, well, what would the opposite be? If you don't have a blue ocean strategy, maybe the opposite of that would be a red ocean strategy. So there was this book, Blue Ocean Strategy, and they kind of described this in those terms, red ocean and blue ocean. Most businesses exist with a red ocean strategy. I would contend that the vast majority, I would say high 90%, you know, 95% or more of financial advisors, their business model exists in the as a red ocean strategy. That is to say, they compete in the existing market space. In other words, they kind of perceive our business the way every other advisor perceives our business. Therefore, clients look at them and have a hard time differentiating one financial advisor from another. How many of you heard a potential client hear what you do for a living and say, oh, I've got somebody doing that for me? It just goes to this point that most potential clients, most clients throw the average financial advisor into the same bucket and kind of assume that you all do the same thing. Red Ocean strategy is designed around beating the competition. It's a dog-eat-dog market. Candidly, when you read the book, the reason it's a red ocean is they talk about sharks in the ocean. And a red ocean strategy is one where the sharks are competing with each other. And you know what sharks do? They rip each other's they rip the competition to shreds. And so then there's a lot of blood in the water. So most financial advisors live in this world where, you know, what they're trying to do is be better than the next financial advisor, but in a world where they're not very differentiated from other financial advisors. It's a dog-eat-dog market, and unfortunately, most financial advisors look like every other financial advisor. And they exploit existing demand. So the thinking of the average financial advisor is clients want better investment management. Or, you know, like, I've got money managers that are better than their money managers. Or we've got a process for money investment management that's better than their process. You know, it's this whole notion that what we do is money management rather than truly comprehensive financial services. Even for advisors that hold themselves out to the public as delivering truly comprehensive financial services, often define what they do in terms of money management. Or it could be financial planning, it could be tax, but the point is that Red Ocean strategy is to exploit, kind of assuming what the client wants in a world where you're just competing with every other vendor out there. It's the commoditization of the business. And they talk in the book quite a bit about making the value to cost trade-off. So what you're doing in a red ocean strategy is you're competing for the business. So, you know, we charge 1.5%, 150 basis points per year for assets under management, and the advisor across the street charges 125 basis points, whatever. Anyway, you're competing for the business, kind of on the same playing field as everybody else, and you make the strategic choice of either differentiation or low cost of service. For example, here in the U.S., you would either be a financial advisor and hold yourself out to the public as offering something that's better than the competition, or you make a decision to enter the marketplace delivering low cost, so like Scott Trade or something like that. And that's what I call that the race to the bottom. And this right here is the red ocean strategy. This is the strategy most financial advisors use. So when we talk about the blue ocean strategy, we're talking about something different. The blue ocean strategy is actually to create what we're doing with Advisor Pact and creating delivering truly comprehensive financial services through a skilled team of subject matter expert. What you're actually doing is creating a financial services monopoly. It's very unlikely that any other financial advisor in your community is doing what you're doing with this effort. And so therefore, you're actually creating an uncontested market space, something that doesn't exist in your community. And you're making the competition irrelevant. So you're creating a new business model, something that's completely different, that if clients wanted to find a competitor of yours, they couldn't find one because they don't exist. You've created a new business model by delivering the way we're suggesting that you put this business model together. And that you're creating and capturing new demand because your mindset is different. You think, rather than clients wanting better investment management or better financial plans or better tax preparation, whatever the case, whatever your specialty, you're thinking clients want and actually can't find Advisor Pact. You know, PACT stands for your pledge to protect clients, to pay close attention to their changing situations so that you can create course corrections that will make the necessary course corrections required to keep the client on track, that you'll coordinate the team of subject matter experts with full transparency. So PACT is something that clients want and think doesn't exist. And so that transparency has to do with making sure that all the potential conflicts of interest for a client are identified, as well as helping clients understand something that most clients don't understand, which is exactly what they're paying for all the client, the financial products and services that they've got in their life. So a Blue Ocean strategy actually breaks this value-cost trade-off. What you're actually doing is you're making cost irrelevant. In other words, clients are willing to pay more because you're completely changing the playing field. You're offering something that's not available, something that they want, and something that they don't think they can find anywhere else. And so you pursue differentiation. Your business model is radically differentiated from other choices that clients have, and you create differentiation and low cost of service. So you're actually seeking both. You're trying to streamline what you do and make what you do very profitable because you're only focusing on the things that matter most. You're focusing on how to deliver advisor pact, and you're getting rid of all these other legacy processes that you've got, which are cumbersome, clients value very little, and you're just being very honest about what it is clients need and want, and you're creating a blue ocean strategy around that. So what's the blue ocean in our business model? In other words, what's missing in our potential clients' financial lives? Well, I'm going to propose that when a potential client comes to you, there are certain things that are typically missing in their lives. Most of the financial people in their lives are tacticians. You know, most wealthy people have financial people in their life before they ever met you. They have accountants, they have lawyers, they have insurance agents. And I'm going to suggest that the existing people in their life, financial people in their life, focus on tactics. By contrast, your blue ocean is you're going to be a strategist. You're going to add something that doesn't exist in most potential clients' lives, a strategy to pull together all these tactics, an overarching strategy. And once the strategy is in existence, in other words, you're going to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy for each and every ideal client. Once it exists, you're going to create oversight. Oversight over what? Oversight over your pledge to protect, pay attention, coordinate, and offer full transparency for this client's financial life. Okay? So, what's the new business model? This new business model, this blue ocean, which we call truly comprehensive financial services, involves two different initiatives, things that you need to get rolling. And one of them involves this extraordinary client experience. So I'll get back to that. But here you are, you're the trusted advisor, you're committed, you're fully committed to delivering truly comprehensive financial services, and you're not wedded to the status quo. You've made a commitment to rip up the script, start with a blank page. So you're committed to developing a blue ocean strategy. So what are the two initiatives that you need to get rolling simultaneously to begin advancing and making progress with this goal? Well, you need to become increasingly more competent. And this means being worthy of delivering on your promises. And then the other initiative is to be increasingly worthy of trust. So this is what clients really dumbed down in simple terms, the way a client views all their professionals is how competent are they and can I trust them? How much can I trust them? So these are your two initiatives that you need to really focus your team on starting from scratch and building up from the ground up. So you're going to, in terms of becoming increasingly more and more competent, delivering truly comprehensive financial services, this is where you build and lead a team of skilled subject matter experts who are going to deliver on the mechanics of truly comprehensive financial services. So building and leading a team. In this area of becoming more and more worthy of trust in a client's mind, this is where we focus on an initiative to deliver an extraordinary client experience, which is what you're asking about. Okay, on the competency side, just a quick run through this. We've talked about this in past episodes, but I just want to fly through this. To become competent, what you need to be doing is acquiring subject matter experts. So you need to commit to acquiring new subject matter experts. You need to commit to a set of specific deliverables. We recommend the 10 client deliverables. We've covered those in past episodes, so you can go search for that, study that. But the point is, you need to offer some specific deliverables around all the major areas of finance, which represent truly comprehensive financial services. So that would be financial planning, money management, tax, estate planning, insurance planning. So creating, let's say, the 10 client deliverables, or delivering on the 10 client deliverables around those five areas of finance, and making sure that every subject matter expert on your team, as you build your team, every one of them is contributing at every client progress meeting, and every subject matter expert is reviewing the work of the others. So this is how you start the ball rolling on increasing competence. So the question you have is, how do we increase or enhance the or deliver upon an extraordinary client experience? Well, you start with the biggest complaint that clients have about their financial advisor, and that is, I never know when I'm going to meet with my financial advisor, or I meet with my financial advisor on some frequency that makes no sense to me, so I don't really understand why I'm coming in quarterly or semi-annually or whatever the frequency is. We have a process that will eliminate this complaint, and it is the three-meeting process. So the first step is to create a systematic frequency of client meetings, not so many meetings that it's unclear to the client what's the point of the meeting, but enough meetings so that your team, as you're developing and building your team, you're having enough meetings with the client to actually get what our team needs to deliver on these promises to the client. So we need access to the client during the year to gain access to their perspectives, their thoughts, their insights of what they're wanting around the financial objectives that they've shared with us. So we need access to the client. There's information, there's documents that only the client possesses, and in some cases, these thoughts or this information is only in the client's mind. And so we've got to create a meeting to be able to meet to get that information out of the client, and sometimes just out of their thoughts. But we don't want to meet with them any more than we have to. So we've come up with the three-meeting process, which we've tried. We tested many meeting frequencies, and this was the meeting process that hit the perfect balance. It's not so many meetings that the client's wondering, why are we meeting? But it's enough meetings. It's the minimum required number of meetings so that we can get what we need from the client. And then to create standard processes. It's to create trust means creating consistency. So we, standard for responsiveness. Forgive me. So responsiveness means, how quick does your team get back to clients? How quick does your team get back to each other? You need to, in creating this extraordinary experience, you need to really emphasize responsiveness. Our standard at our firm is the same for clients as it is for internal staff members. So we expect internal staff members to get back with each other as quickly as we would expect them to get back with a client. Our standard is that we expect every team member to respond within hours to any outreach from anyone, and within one business day as a minimum standard. So in the worst case scenario, everybody on our team will always get back with someone in one business day or less. And we'll continue following up with the individual until by interacting at least once every one business day until the issue is resolved. So let's say a client calls in with a question or a problem, and we can't get the problem resolved immediately. They get a response within hours, and we keep following up with the client at least once every business day until the issue is resolved. So the point is, have you created a standard for responsiveness? Is it different between clients and staff members? If you want to increase, enhance the client experience, create a very responsive team. And we have a process for what I was talking about a moment ago, creating consistency in your client experience. And that is a method of documenting processes which we call the best way. I'm not going to go through it here. If you have a question about how to document a process in your office for consistency in a way that's not time-consuming, then you can ask me about the best way process, and I'll walk through it with you. It's a method for creating a documented process in 20 minutes or less, no matter how complicated the process is. So we suggest, if you want to enhance the client experience, you set a weekly goal for documenting processes, and you prioritize. What are the processes that are not currently documented that, if they were documented, would have the greatest impact on the client experience? So, and you know, we could talk a lot about processes, but set a weekly goal for documenting processes. You'll see the consistency increase in the client experience. And once you're documenting processes, then you sit about and you map out every step of the client experience from the time you first interact with a new potential client, to the first phone call, to setting the initial client interview and confirming that interview, and you know, every step in the client relationship, you create these kind of moments of truth and orchestrate and create a process for each and every step in the process. So, delivering a truly extraordinary client experience, what's involved? I'm going to suggest that you split this out in your thinking to the time prior to an individual becoming an ideal client, and then the time after someone becomes an ideal client. So before an individual becomes an ideal client, we recommend, and what we've implemented, is something called the MISC organizer. I will show you what it looks like. This is something available on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. So if you have full access to the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, you can download this and look at it. But let me just show you what it is, because I believe that whether you're using the toolkit or not, you can create this tool. And let me just show you what it is so you can understand the benefit of it. If you're trying to create an extraordinary client experience, I have found this begins with the very first time you learn the name of a potential client. So let's say somebody's referred to you. They're referred to you by someone. So we have always worked with people that refer or introduce us to individuals to learn more about the person being referred. So we have created a 10-page form which allows us, over time, you don't sit down and fill this out with the client, you just, as you slowly develop a relationship and you learn more about this person, beginning with talking to the individual that introduced us, you know, tell me a little bit about them. What's their life all about? What do they really enjoy? What, you know, and you start to learn that they've got grown children and they've got three grandchildren, and they went to the same university as the person who introduced them. So we both went to the same university, and they have a background in whatever their professional career is, and they're really into their grandchildren's lives, and their grandchildren are into sports. And this MISC organizer, just as you learn more and more about a potential client, and then ultimately you keep this thing going as you have an ideal client, the MISC organizer just helps. It's a place to keep track of all this personal information as you're learning it about a potential client and then ultimately a client. So here's a couple more pages from this. I just wanted to give you a sense of what this is. I think if your goal is to deliver a truly extraordinary client experience, I'm not a big fan of chit-chat in a meeting, but I will tell you this: the more you know about your clients, the deeper the relationship will become. So you don't want to have your meetings talking about all this background information and chit chat about, you know, the private interests of your clients. But I'm just pointing out that the more you know about your client, the more insights you have from a planning standpoint, but also the deeper the relationship will become over time. If you know a lot about a couple, then they know that. It'll come out in just banter. So as you pick up the phone and they and say, how are you doing? And they say, oh, we just got back from Europe. And you go, oh, with your three grandchildren or whatever the case. It will come out in very small ways over a period of time. And I'm recommending that if you want to deliver an extraordinary client experience, you begin by having a method of tracking all this personal information about every person, starting at the point they're a potential client. So before they become an ideal client, you begin tracking this. And you need to have an extraordinary initial client interview. So when you get to the point of you've met somebody, you've chit-chatted over time, at some point you've orchestrated the process to where you've identified that this is a not just somebody, a nice person, but it's a potential client, and you've invited them for an initial client interview, you need to have a compelling initial client interview, and you need to be very skilled at this. So the initial client interview we recommend, the one that I used, is the best in the financial services industry. It's the Financial Roadmap meeting taught by Bill Bachrach. So if you have questions about that, you can click Contact Us on our site, and I'll put you with Bill Bachrach. If you have any questions about the financial roadmap or how to learn how to use a financial roadmap, just let us know and we'll point you in their direction. I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel. If you're not acquiring ideal clients at a routine, regular, fast clip, then I recommend you look into the financial roadmap. But whatever process you use to acquire clients, you need to be extraordinary at it. And I will just point out that if your goal is to deliver a truly extraordinary client experience, most advisors do not practice. Most advisors do not practice their meeting skills. Most advisors don't sit down and drill and become better at their initial client interview. And I would suggest just one thing, and then we'll move on, is record these meetings. You know, the first step in coaching on anything is to record so that you can listen to it later and improve. All right? So having consistent processes, I would say general phone skills. If you want to increase your client experience, make sure that the people answering your phones have great general phone skills, script them as to how to answer the phone and how to deal with phone situations, how to transfer calls, how to take a message, all these things, and especially confirming appointments. I think if you can create an extraordinary experience, even in the confirming of an appointment, like how could you make even something as mundane as confirming an appointment something noticeable to a potential client as to the fact that you're different, you're extraordinary, there is a way to do it. Make it your challenge to figure that out. And also preparing for the potential client's arrival at your office. One thing that we have on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, and whether you're using the toolkit or not, you can do this, but we have a process, a best way process for preparing for a potential client's arrival at the office. And that includes issues of office decorum, you know, setting standards of how people are to be dressed in the office and the cleanliness of the office. You know, if a client's coming in the office, we can't have anybody on our team that's got a messy desk. The atmosphere, I don't know if you have music in your office, whatever the case, some advisors make a big deal out of the beverages that they can offer to clients. I think these are all, you know, sideline issues, but it all goes to the extraordinary experience. I mean, you can create a process for the potential client's arrival that is extraordinary. And in our case, it involves going down to the parking lot and making sure there's no trash around the building, all that kind of thing. So if you're truly committed to becoming to delivering an extraordinary experience, this is the level of detail that you need to be thinking. Then there is, of course, after becoming an ideal client. So after an individual or a couple becomes an ideal client, this whole idea of practicing, and most advisors don't practice or drill or even try to improve the experience. Listen to the recordings. Listen to that moment where you invited someone to become an ideal client. Listen to the experience. Listen to what they said. Listen to the questions they ask. That moment should be significant. My friend Rick Barrera calls this a signature moment, the moment in which you invite an ideal client into your ideal client community and they accept. That should be a signature moment. It should be memorable. So what can you be doing in that moment? We can, if you have questions about that, we can deal with that in future sessions. But I'm just telling you, it should be memorable. Is it? So you should, as an action item after this session, you should go listen to your last three client acquisition recorded meetings and listen to that moment and just assess, was it memorable? Is it something that that client will remember for the years in the future? And this is where you actually make your advisor pact pledge. Once you've invited a potential client into your ideal client community, once they've accepted, it's at that point, any point after that, you can make your pledge to the client that you're going to make your advisor pact promise. You need to practice that pledge. Listen to it on the recording. If you're not convinced that it's that great of an experience, then you need to practice that. And have you considered offering a new ideal client welcome kit? After someone becomes an ideal client, sending them something that helps them understand how to utilize your firm in a way that it's going to deliver an extraordinary experience. You can ask us more about that if you have questions about how to put something like that together. And deliver an extraordinary client progress meeting at each and every progress meeting. The three meeting process, you're going to be meeting with clients every 4 months, and it's up to you to practice and drill and keep improving that meeting to deliver an extraordinary experience. That is your best hope of delivering a great experience, is perfecting that meeting. There are three important elements to a client progress meeting, the way we teach you to do it. The three elements of a routine client progress meeting are the progress report, and that is reporting on the client's progress benchmarked against their goals, not any discussion of the financial markets. The highest priority conversation, which is to say the conversation that is the most important conversation that needs to be had at that meeting with that client, depending upon what's going on in their financial situation. And the greatest probability strategy, which is the list that you provide your clients at every client progress meeting. It's the prioritized list of action items that this client needs to accomplish to be on track to their goals. So again, in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we offer something called the Client Progress Meeting Timeline, 60-minute timeline. I'm going to, in the replay for this session, offer this timeline as a download so you can look at it. But here's how we recommend that you create an extraordinary client experience at each and every client progress meeting. And to do it, and to discipline and manage your time so that it's accomplished in a 60-minute time period. Okay, there's nothing magic about 60 minutes. You can, of course, go longer with a client, especially if they have special issues going on in their life. But I think the idea is, can you as an advisor gain the skill and the discipline of getting the meeting in under 60 minutes and making it an extraordinary experience? So I mentioned the progress reports. This is the routine portion of the meeting that you do with every client in every meeting. You just measure progress. It should be very short, 10 minutes. Don't spend more than 10 minutes. Don't talk about the financial markets. Specifically review the client's progress as it relates to their goals that they've set. Then you have you've had the routine portion. That's the progress reports. Now you shift to the focused portion of the meeting. That's the big chunk of the meeting. That's 45 minutes out of the hour, okay? And the 45 minutes is invested in three 15-minute increments. So you have a meeting exercise. So we won't go into this. This is stuff that we cover fully in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. But it's really designed to around each of the meeting purposes in the three-meeting process to have an exercise, a conversation with the client to advance the agenda of each and every meeting in the three-meeting process. I think more important is think about the highest priority conversation. You know, are you dialed in? Are you prepared? Have you thought in advance? If I just had one conversation with this client in this meeting, what would be the highest priority conversation? And if you have maybe one or two, this is a timed exercise. Spend 15 minutes going through the highest priority conversation and coming to some resolution as it relates to each of these high priority conversations. I like it if I can identify just one single highest priority conversation and really invest 15 minutes exploring it and coming to some resolution, making a recommendation. And then the final 15 minutes is to review what we call the GPS. This is the step-by-step implementation plan of action. This is the action items, a list of action items created by my team of what the client needs to actually get done to stay on track to their goals. So in this focus portion of the meeting, I make sure that we cover everything that needs to happen between now and the next meeting. So this is a really streamlined timeline, and we have tested it. We've surveyed clients. We've dialed it in and honed and refined it over many, many years. And this is the template. This is the formula for delivering what clients say is an extraordinary client experience. And then, of course, at the end of the experience, at the end of the progress meeting, you then transition to the referral conversation and begin testing how, you know, if you're delivering at a high level, if your team's really that great, and if you're delivering an extraordinary client experience, you'll know it when you get to the referral conversation. Because if you're delivering your value in a way that's indispensable to clients, they will not be able to resist introducing you to every single person that they know. Well, that's it for the Monthly Advisor Pact session. I'm Mark Little. Until next month, we wish you all the best in implementing.